It's our third birthday.
Happy birthday, us. We'll be celebrating in a bumper birthday video coming soon, and we want to answer your questions.
So if you've ever wondered what our favourite facts are, or how we choose what events to cover, or why we got the giggles in a particular episode, now is your opportunity to ask.
Email us now at theretrospectors@gmail.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's April 12th, 1961, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Aria, Rebecca, and Ali, the Retrospectors.
At precisely 9:07 a.m. today in history in 1961, the Russian cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin lifted off from the Tyaratam missile range in Kazakhstan, launching himself into the record books as the first ever human in space. And as his ship blasted off, Gagarin shouted the surprisingly informal and immediately iconic exclamation, "Поехали!" meaning literally, "Let's go!"
Yeah, and this was about the best clip we have of the cockpit audio. Gagarin was known for being calm and collected, which didn't really make for thrilling audio, or indeed a thrilling post-flight report, which was full of understated gems like the feeling of weightlessness was somewhat unfamiliar compared with Earth conditions. What he didn't say, however, was, "I see no God up here," which a quote which was often attributed to him, although he did make some similar statements afterwards. The most famous moment was that cry of "Let's go." That was about the juiciest thing he said during the flight, which lasted for 108 minutes before he made his safe re-entry into Earth's atmosphere.
So pretty short. I mean, don't get me wrong, death-defying and scary and thrilling, but actually, you know, compared to space missions afterwards, this wasn't very long. He didn't have very long to say anything or make any observations. And in fact, even though he was a skilled pilot, and that was one of the reasons that he was chosen, his proficiency in that department was completely irrelevant in the final event because the whole thing was being manoeuvred from the ground. Gagarin's sole purpose really was A, to survive, and B, write down his observations whilst he was in the craft, which he actually failed to do mostly because he let go of his pencil and it floated out of sight, so he didn't have it to hand. Regardless, this was obviously a historic moment. The first man in space.
And it was so dangerous that, he made it back to Earth safely, but what happened as he came down was that the cables linking his spacecraft's descent module to the service module failed to separate during his re-entry into the atmosphere, which caused this violent shaking in the ship. Gagarin then parachuted to a safe landing near the Volga River before his capsule hit the ground.
Yeah, he ejected, which was not really flagged up at the time, was it?
And for a very good reason, because for the mission to count as an official spaceflight, the pilot had to land with the spacecraft. So Soviet leaders indicated that Gagarin had touched down with the Vostok 1, not revealing that he'd ejected until 1971. So this was a long time before we heard the truth of how touch and go it was at the end there.
But nonetheless, he had survived, and after news of the safe return was confirmed, the state's propaganda machinery kicked into gear, as you can imagine. There was wall-to-wall coverage of this triumph on state radio and television, loudspeakers blaring the news across public spaces. But there was a very real spontaneous response too. You know, crowds celebrated in the streets of major cities. In fact, you can tell that a lot of the gatherings were spontaneous because they unsettled the Soviet police. They broke up a celebratory dance party of international students in Moscow. All the while, Gagarin himself was nowhere to be seen. Immediately after landing, he was whisked away to be intensely examined, as you'd imagine, for the first human to undergo the effects of space.
So he then went on a 27-nation tour. He was invited to the United Nations in New York so that technically he didn't step onto US soil because he went straight from the airport and back again. He was an international dignitary. He was the face of the Soviet space mission. And he had been carefully selected for that, because he did appear to be the kind of relatable, charming country boy of rural Russia. And in fact, his parents weren't allowed to know he was taking part in this historic event. He was allowed to inform his mother only that he was off on a work trip. Far away, she asked. Very, he said.
He was very intelligent, very capable, very charismatic. He didn't have the credentials of many of NASA's Mercury 7, you know, the first class of American astronauts. They had all been college educated and were all experienced test pilots, really at the top of their game. And this was because the Russian space program was, you know, fittingly, far less individualistic than what NASA was doing. They weren't about building ultra complex tech for brilliant pilots. They were about making the process as automated as possible. The cosmonauts weren't even required to press buttons. You know, the philosophy was humans were the biggest mission risk, you know, not the machinery. And actually, Gagarin's biggest asset was his 5'2" stature. The Soviet capsule was significantly smaller than the ones being developed for American astronauts. And the Soviet's chief rocket designer, Sergei Korolev, had set very specific height and weight limits. And actually, Gagarin had almost failed pilot school because his height restricted his view during landings. He only passed on his final go with the aid of a cushion.
Yeah, he really was just to sit there and breathe and come back again. And as Gagarin put it himself later, I'm not sure if I was the first man in space or the last dog. Because over the previous 9 months to this day, 10 dogs had attempted the same trip that Yuri would eventually do. Only 6 had made it back alive. And, you know, there were all sorts of things that only came out well after the 1980s about what was going on in this period. There'd been a disastrous explosion on a launch pad in Kazakhstan in 1960, which had allegedly killed dozens of people, including a Soviet field marshal. A cosmonaut in training had died in 1961. That was covered up by the Soviet authorities until the 1980s. And even if there hadn't been deaths, the point was it was literally unknown what zero gravity and space pressures would do to a human brain.
It was a week after his return that he was finally unveiled to the world, you know, the new Soviet national hero. Footage of a massive parade in his honour was circulated around the world. At the peak of it, Khrushchev made him an official hero of the Soviet Union. But the problem was that this national hero status kind of put paid to his cosmonaut career. Officials didn't want any super bummer accidents. You know, it's easy to cover up the death of somebody who nobody knows about. So instead, they sent him off on this world tour. He served as a representative in Russia's lower house of parliament as well. The problem was he wanted to get back into aviation, but in 1966, when he got the opportunity, he was out of shape after several years as, you know, public speaker, politician, honoured guest. 3 careers all involve a lot of banquet dinners and boozing. So he was still not permitted to return to space flight. He was able to get back into routine training flights. Meanwhile, between April 1961 and June 1963, the Vostok program continued. They launched 6 successful manned space flights, and the final one, a woman space flight, Valentina Tereshkova, over the first woman in space. And, you know, Gagarin was kind of on the sidelines through all of this.
And so he remained only a contender and a distant one at that until he was ultimately replaced and reassigned to the Soyuz 3. They were like, let's just kick this down a bit. You can go up in like the rocket after the rocket after the rocket. You know, the Soyuz 1 went up, but it was a bit rushed in the end, influenced by these political pressures of the space race with the US, which resulted in a fatal crash, which led to Gagarin's permanent ban from further space flights and solo aircraft flying duties, which he later worked to lift. But because he'd been kind of involved in that mission and turned his hand to being a trainer and backup crew, the reflection of the failure of that flight came back on him. And so it sort of isolated him yet further.
Well, his career came to a sharp end on the 27th of March 1968 when he was on a routine training flight in a MiG-15 fighter jet with test pilot and fellow hero of the Soviet Union, Vladimir Suryugin, when it lost contact with the ground, and several hours later, rescue helicopters spotted the wreckage. The lack of exact details given by the Soviet government and the fact that both bodies were cremated the next day has led to several conspiracy theories about what exactly could have happened that might have given potential embarrassment to the Soviet government. Was there a mechanical fault with the jet? Could one of these two heroes have made a mistake? Was it even maybe a politically motivated assassination because Gagarin was too beloved?
Ultimately, it wasn't until 2013 when a declassified report shed light on what actually happened. Alexei Leonov, who served on the investigative board, said on Russian TV that an Su-15 jet being tested that day deviated from its planned altitude, flying really, really low and close to Gagarin's MiG-15 at approximately 2,000 feet instead of where it should be at 30,000 feet. And Leonov said that a large aircraft like an Su-15 had the capability ability to roll over a smaller one, such as a MiG-15, if they came into close proximity. And computer simulations conducted for the report concluded that that's basically what happened, that Gagarin's plane flipped, initiating this unrecoverable spiral dive towards the ground. And so it was kind of this long story, drawn out thing, which basically was the Soviet and then Russian government unable to admit exactly what they were testing that day.
Well, if there had been any concern that he was getting a bit too big for his boots and, you know, becoming too popular, then his death did not resolve that issue because, you know, having been preserved at the age of 34 in the public imagination, there are now countless Gagarin streets and Gagarin squares and Gagarin schools, etc., all across Russia. There is a 125-foot-tall titanium statue, arms outstretched, kind of Stalinist style, over three motorways in Moscow. There's even a statue of him on the Mall in London, which was unveiled by Prince Michael of Kent in 2011. So I think there's something kind of cool about him, isn't there? Because he survived this incredible mission, and then he did die in a later one, but it was a practice, and people forget about the details of that. They just remember him being the age he was. So he like gets all the credit for doing this amazing thing and is preserved at roughly the age that he was when he did it.
Yeah, but where are all the schools named after the heroic Russian cosmodogs?
And so another week of retrospecting ends. But next week begins a day early at Club Retrospectors. Join us now to get an exclusive episode every Sunday. Patreon.com/retrospectors.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.